Hello and welcome to the Spooky Chris podcast. I am your aforementioned Spooky Chris. My name is Chris Ringler. I'm an author, reviewer, podcaster, and general ne'er-do-well, and I welcome you. This episode, we're going to have a really fun conversation with author Tim Mulligan, who has a really neat work coming out soon. Tim is an award-winning playwright of two off-Broadway plays, Point Loma and Witchland, the author of two best-selling cookbooks, A Perfect 10 and A Perfect 10 Party Edition, a best-selling business author of Roar, How to Build a Resilient Organization, the world-famous San Diego Zoo Way, and the author of The World of Witchland graphic novel series, Ditchland, Twitchland, Snitchland, and Witchland, which we'll be talking about today. Tim has had a highly successful career in human resources, working for the San Diego Zoo, Paul Allen's Vulcan, Starwood Hotels and Resorts worldwide, among others. He earned a JD from Gonzaga University of Law, graduating magna cum laude. Also participated in an international law program at Downing College of Law in Cambridge, England. You can read his newest work, Ditchland, coming out from High Point Lit, September 15th. It is the newest entry in the Witchland series, and it's a graphic novel, which I haven't gotten a chance to really talk with many folks that are working in that realm, so I'm excited to talk to him, and I think it'll be a great conversation, and I welcome you to come along. Thank you so much for joining me and making some time, Tim. How are you today?
I'm great. Really good. Thank you.
It's an honor to have you. I don't want to waste any of your time, so I'll just dive right in. What were you kind of reading and watching and absorbing as a young person?
Well, I mean, I've always been drawn to scary and the kind of the darker things. So I've always liked reading about horror. Even as a young child, I probably read Jaws when I was 9. You know, oh, wow. So I've always kind of had an affinity towards horror, towards scary things, towards a little dark humor, dark comedy, dark scary stories. So I've always felt that way, which is obviously or leaned that way, and which is obviously what's I think led to my now writing. And it's, you know, these stories that are based in horror but based in truth as well.
Do you remember kind of what got you interested in that, reading that stuff?
No, I don't know. I think my mother, you know, used to take me to scary movies as a young child, and so I've always enjoyed that. I mean, even so, I've even done the same thing with my own daughter. We it's something we really love to do together is watch scary shows. So, I've never been one to really lean into, you know, light comedies or light anything really. I like a little edge to my pop culture.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's similarly, my mom was the one that got me interested in all things kind of spooky. So that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And comic books and graphic novels. I mean, I've always liked that world. So I think that's what led to me creating this series of graphic novels, you know.
That's amazing. Which I will try to remember to bring that back, like, specifically. Now, you grew up in a fascinating area. Can you tell me a little bit about how that shaped your childhood?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting place to live and grow up. This is in a small town in eastern Washington. It's Richland, Washington. It's a beautiful kind of idyllic setting nestled up against the Columbia River. It's a great place to grow up. I was born and raised, and I even went back at a later age as an adult and was as a lawyer there for a few years. And, you know, you have this great little small town Americana feel, but then you also have this nuclear reactor, you know, down the street that, you know, was used to produce plutonium for World War II for the bombs. And it's just, you kind of juggle that, you know, you don't really talk about, I think the health, you know, dangers and the history of lawsuits and, you know, and sickness and things like that. And so you kind of juggle it. I think growing up there, you don't even talk about it. Now, stepping back, as I'm not there anymore, but even though I've I still visit. I have friends and family there. People just, they employ so many people there that just really love living there and just don't, and just kind of don't lean into the history and the 50 million gallons of toxic waste buried in the ground there, So, it's an interesting thing, and it's a place that no one ever really knows about. I think that's why folks have been drawn to my stories, is because they think I'm making the place up, and it's a real place, and each one of the graphic novels tells a real aspect of living there. And so I tried to take different aspects of growing up there, of living there, and then add my own kind of supernatural twist to it.
That's awesome. How conscious were you of kind of like kind of the impact of where you lived as a young person?
Not at all. I mean, I can tell you that I even worked at the nuclear site as an intern in my high school years, and I had no idea what was going on. So
Wow.
there was never any talk of the history there. I think now it's a little more open and transparent, but back growing up there, it was never taught in schools. I mean, even the fact that, I mean, I graduated in the mid 80s, and it's right when a lot of things came to light about, some nuclear releases that were set out in the 50s, and it got many, many, many people sick. And in 1986, they quit producing the plutonium. That was the year I was in high school. No one talked. I didn't know any of that. I didn't know until years later, So it's really, that's why I said it's kind of a dichotomy of, having a perfect life there, and then also having all these secrets and mysteries, and what happens at the reactor we just don't talk about,
Wow, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
Now, w were there any kind of local legends or stories from your area that struck you? Kind of, like how those kind of stories permeate our childhood sometimes.
Oh yeah. In fact, and most of them I've incorporated into this graphic novel series as well. Like, for instance, the first book is called Witchland, and it kind of tells a story of if myself and my partner, and we brought our daughter and moved, if we moved to their modern day and we're living in Hanford in Richmond, what it would be like. But also there is, for instance, there is a witch that I was always told a witch lived in this house. And every small town has their, these haunted house stories or these tales. And but this witch kind of haunted me and my small group of friends all throughout high school. It was a big part of our life. And so, and then I found out later in life that there's a whole history there tied back to Hanford. So I incorporate, that's what the first book, Witchland, is all about, which started this whole thing off. Then, and then I got into the second book, which was about whistleblowers out there. And I, growing up at Hanford, I had parents who worked out there, and friends of parents who would pull me aside and tell me that they thought their phone were being tapped, and they thought they were being followed, and they thought all these things were happening. And so that prompted me to write that one. The current one, the current book is coming out, Ditchland. It comes out in a few weeks. It's on Amazon now. It's based on all the animal experimentation that happened out there, and we knew there was a building that was that we it was known as the puppy mill, which is really distressing to say that now and to think back to what a kind of naive high school kids we were. But we would go out there and have parties around this mill outside at night, at this building at night. And now that I look back and realize that was a lab where animal testing was going on. So there's a lot of lore there. There's a lot of truth there with the lawsuits and the history, but it was kind of ripe for supernatural stories as well.
Gosh, yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
Now you have had a fascinating career, like have written plays and cookbooks and business book. Can you tell me about these projects?
Yeah, I mean, I've been in the business world, and I still am today. I work full time in management, and I've been doing that for, I'm a lawyer and an HR leader for 30 years now. So I've been raising a family, and so it really wasn't until, I mean, I wrote a business book in 2017. That was my first book, and it was all about leadership and resiliency. But it really was when COVID hit, and I was quarantining at home like everybody else, and I thought, I'm going to use this time differently, and I'm going to start kind of putting some of these ideas in my head on paper. And I always had this idea of writing some of these stories about my childhood and about my hometown, and in a fun way. So it was kind of a scary, supernatural tribute to my hometown. So I didn't write my first play until 2000. I started it, and I really taught myself. I looked at how you format a play script. And I just started storyboarding it and toiling away at it. I thought I would never even finish it. And then I did. And then I thought that was it. But then I kind of thought maybe I'll send it to some theater folks that I know in San Diego. And then that just led to everything. So since 2020 is when all this started. I was in my mid-50s when I started writing, or early low 50, early 50s. So it happened late in life for me. And now since COVID, I've written this series of plays. Some have gone on to New York, some are staged around the country. I have this series of graphic novels. So it's really been a whirlwind and happened late in life.
That's amazing. And I think that's refreshing for a lot of people to hear, because you hear so often, the stories of the young people that are just these wunderkinds, and they forget that people of all ages are jumping into this. So that's fantastic. Now, what made you want to do a cookbook? Because that's fascinating to me.
Well, I come from hospitality. I mean, I started off my career in restaurants and food and beverage, and I'm a foodie. I love food. I love cooking. I've always been the person who, in my family, who carries the traditions, carries the recipes from my ancestors, and I think I'm the one in the family people look to for Aunt so and so's recipe and this recipe. So during that COVID time, I really wanted to do two things with that time. At that point, we didn't know how long the pandemic was going to last, but I wanted to do two things. One was write a play, and one was write a cookbook. So I started with the cookbook, and so I just gathered my recipes that I love and started taking my own pictures with my iPhone. Luckily, I had a publisher from the business book I'd written, and his company was wanting to do a cookbook, so I think the timing was right for me. So I created, it's called a Perfect 10. It's my 10 favorite recipes for every meal period. And I just had a blast with my daughter and she was in high school at the time, and we just cooked up a storm during the pandemic, documented it all with a blog that got, next thing you knew, I had 20,000 users on followers on Instagram looking at my blog. And then we published our first cookbook, A Perfect 10. It did really well. And then we published a second one called A Perfect 10 Party Edition with party recipes. So it was really just this fun idea that we had that really took off. And then from there, I got into the plays.
That's awesome. And I love that you incorporated your daughter into that. That is amazing. Now, what do you like about writing specifically for the stage as compared to writing, kind of, for the page, as it were?
Well, my first goal was a play. I love plays. I love live theater. I've been on theater boards for a long time. I've never been on the creative side, really. And I also, like I said earlier, love scary things. And every now and then, I've seen a play that is meant to be a scary play, or they've tried to be a scary play. I'm not knocking those plays. I just hadn't seen one that really did it for me. And I got inspired. I saw a play a few years ago in Seattle. And I'm not going to say what it was, but it was one that had traveled from London, where it had played for many, many decades, and to packed houses. And I was with my brother, and I remember looking around at this theater full of kind of Seattleites, adults, and they were just like giddy that they were going to be scared in this play, and just the littlest things would make them jump and scream. And I was thinking, that's what's going to do it. Maybe I should write a really scary play, So that kind of prompted me to say, what could I add to this, genre that I felt was lacking or missing? And that's what I did with Witchland. So I thought, how can I tell this funny story of my life and put my family into this modern day nuclear cleanup site in small town America, harken back to the history of Hanford and the downwinders lawsuits and the cancer stories, the incorporate the witch that I talked about. And what if I took my modern day family, moved to Hanford, and by the way, we're living across the street from a woman who might be a witch, so I just thought that'd be a really fun play, and that could really scare people. And that's, I think, what it's done. So people who've seen the play Witchland have just had a blast when they're there. I look at it as like a fun night out for adults, almost like going to a haunted house if you're younger, and this is like an adult night out that, it's kind of heady and it's based on a real place, but it's also super fun and scary. And so that prompted me to keep going with it. And now I've written three plays that are, I think, in that genre. So,
That's amazing. What made you want to adapt it for not a traditional format, but for graphic novels?
yeah, I mean, people, not everyone was able to see the play, and still is not able to see the play. And so I had many people reaching out and wanting to say, where can we see this show? And getting a play staged is like the hardest thing I've ever encountered. So I thought, well, I love graphic novels, and so why don't I take a stab at adapting this to a graphic novel? So I kind of then taught myself, I studied graphic novels and how they're formatted, and I really felt that if I got the right artist, graphic artist, I could show this the story. And I think the horror there can happen more so than a novel. I love novels, don't get me wrong, but in a graphic novel, I can the horror and the story can happen, visually and immediately, and you can really, put an image to the horror there in the stories. And especially if I'm doing supernatural things that, now I have werewolves and vampires and ghosts and witches. It's hard to do on stage, but it's been really fun to do on in art. And I think you can also do just a great juxtaposition of you could really show what Richland is like, and so I worked with this graphic designer. I hired a guy out of Mexico named Pyrink. He's done all four of my books, and he's doing the fifth one, which will come out early in the year. That'll be the final series of the series. And he really gets it, and we are able to paint a picture of what it's like living in the small town by this nuclear plant, and also have a lot of fun with the dark side of it and the graphic side, and also the light, funny side of this family who's kind of taken us through the journey. So it's just a visual way of telling my story and getting it into the hands and in front of people who maybe weren't able to see the play shows.
Awesome. Now we've been talking around it. It's time to really dig in. So, this September, you're releasing Ditchland, the fourth book of the series. Can you tell me a little bit about the series and the newest entry?
Yeah, so the series is about, like I said, Witchland was the first one. It tells a story of based on my own family, my partner and I. We've been together many years. We have two kids, but in the novel Witchland, or the graphic novel Witchland, one of the dads gets a job working at the nuclear cleanup site at Hanford. They have a daughter who's of color, and she's teenage, and they're, a same-sex couple, and they move to this town which is not very diverse, and so they're kind of fish out of water. But they're also finding themselves in the middle of strange circumstances because of their living in the shadow of this nuclear reactor, where one of them actually gets exposed and sickness starts happening. So that's been the tale. So with every story I've added, with every volume I've added to it, I tell a different aspect of living there. And so I covered the history of the Downwinders lawsuits and the kind of the cancer stories that are unfortunate that have come out of there, that all of us who are from there have been impacted in some way. The second book is a follow-up. It's all about modern day whistleblowers, that's Snitchland, and what it's like to live there now, and it's more of a ghost story of folks who maybe, perished out there, and but it's kind of a ghost story mystery about involving whistleblowers. The third one, Twitchland, built upon that. I kind of delved more into this kind of small town drug epidemic and made kind of created my own vampire story, but it involves, what if instead of fentanyl or other drugs, what if folks got addicted to toxic waste? I mean, there's 50 million gallons of it buried in the ground there. Yeah. So, I take my own, liberties with it. But the fourth one, to answer your question, Ditchland, I really delved into all the years of animal testing that were done out there. And I think what prompted me was an article I read that I had no idea about back in 2007. So not too long away, far, far, far back, a bunch of workers at Hanford found a buried railroad car full of all these carcasses of animals, mostly dogs, and that are supposed to have been buried. They were buried, but they're supposed to have been burned, and they were not. So it just prompted me to do this research on how they got there and why were they in this one ditch and this one trench, and it just opened the door to all the research. And so, up to, back in the day, late 40s, early 50s, there's up to 1,000 animals at a time there on site there at Hanford. Mostly, farm animals, a lot of cats and dogs, rodents, pigs, sheep, goats, and even alligators. There's this lore in Richland that just, radioactive alligators escaped and made their way into the Columbia River. So, but they did animal testing for decades out there, and I'm an animal lover, and it was it's distressing, disturbing, but it's, I it's an area, it's a truth that happens. So I thought I would turn my own story, into it. Or what if there was, what if some of that radioactive animal blood made its way into the hospital and started turning kids into werewolves? So it's kind of an animal revenge story where the werewolves will congregate around at night, this ditch where all these animal carcasses were found. So, like I said, it tells the whole, it tells the history and the backstory of all the animal testing done out there, and also paints a modern day twist with, monsters and supernatural mysteries, and it's up to our family to our key family to save the day and to uncover this secret and save the town.
How has it been balancing kind of the family aspect and the heart of your series and with and against kind of the horror. How has that worked for you?
Well, with the family, it's been great because I really, like I said, I based it on myself, my partner, and my daughter. So, if several years ago we had a great life in San Diego, and I got a job offer personally that I couldn't say no to up in Seattle. And so, right before the pandemic, I pulled my family out of our life here and out of school and moved them to Seattle. And so, in I thought with Wish and what, I've said a few times, well, it could have been different. I could have moved you back to my hometown. So then that kind of prompted me to say, well, what if that had happened? Because there's great jobs at that cleanup site and they pay well. And so what if this family had moved there? So I was able to kind of I've been able to lean back on the heart of these stories is the family. And I think that's, to me, that's important in most horror stories as well, that you have like a family drama or a non-supernatural, character set, and then all these crazy things happen around them. So I've tried to keep it funny with the family. And the main dad is his name's Van. He's kind of based on me, and I try to always find humor in everything. So I've leaned into with the family the horror, the humor, the absurdity of it, the fish out of water aspect of it, the living in a town where they're not quite accepted at first. They do find their own tribe and culture, community as they go, but they congregate at the local Spudnut donut store, which is a real place. And my hometown's known for, I think, two things really. One is donuts and one is nuclear waste. And so I tried to have fun with that. And so there's a hangout spot where they all meet up at, where there's a lot of funny things and a lot of funny dialogue. But and then I throw in the scares and I throw in the shocks of radioactivity and toxic waste. So, but the family, to me, keeping that family unit intact and having a heroine who's the main character, Allie, based on my daughter. She's like the one, common thread throughout all these stories, that she's a smart one. She's the one we all look to save the day. And that's been key, I think, for this family story.
That's awesome. What does she think about that? About being kind of being this, having a heroine based on her.
She loves it. I don't know if she loves all the artwork about, of this version of her, but she thinks it's fun, especially when you see the play and it's based on the main actress is various actresses that kind of play a version of her. That's really fun for her to see. My
That's.
son, he's a few years older, he wants nothing to do with it, and he's not even mentioned in the books because he doesn't want anything to do with
Oh,
it.
wow. Now, was it difficult to kind of take something which is, I mean, the story of this nuclear plant and stuff and kind of add kind of supernatural horror to it? Did it feel kind of a natural thing or just a good way to do it?
Yeah, I think that I'm just surprised. There's so many aspects of living in a town like Richland that has this. It's not just a current, producing nuclear site. It's actually a multi-billion dollar cleanup site of all this waste. And so it's a and people just don't hear about it and don't know about it. It hasn't really made its way into the pop culture world. And so I to me, I think there's something really interesting about these kind of, it's kind of an environmental cautionary tale, mixing it with supernatural elements, and the idea that there's a community there that's living alongside this potentially or this seriously dangerous, industrial activity. So it really lends itself well to, I think, a horror series. And I also like the idea, there's a lot of hearkening back and backstories to when Hanford started in the late 40s, and the main witch character who plays, she's a character all throughout this, that she was there when it all started in the late 40s. And so I like this idea of kind of this toxic legacy passing from generation to generation. And also, for a horror story, for if you're a conspiracy theorist, if you like horror, if you like supernatural, just the fact that there's secrets that the government's keeping, let's say, or we're keeping, secret corporations are keeping, that communities are keeping, that they'd probably prefer to remain buried, to bring that out and put a supernatural twist in it, and show that, this family that's there is kind of the scene that there's this physical, embodiment of these buried secrets. It lends itself well. I could probably go on with this series in perpetuity, but I've it's a 5-story series, and I think that's been enough.
So what were some of the the graphic novels that kind of inspired you before you started doing it and stuff? And were there any that stick out?
Oh gosh. I mean, I've always liked comics. I have a bunch of graphic novels. I think when I was actually getting, I love Watchmen. I like when they take some films and they convert it to a graphic novel. One that I used as a role model in just the mapping out of the frames and the taking your story and converting it to a graphic novel. There was a beautiful version of To Kill a Mockingbird that I have on my office, a graphic novel that I have really used as a frame of reference and just a perfect way to do a graphic novel, I thought. So I just those are the main ones. I've read a ton of graphic novels, but I think when I really came down to, putting pen to paper and taking my story and converting it, there were a few like that like I just mentioned that really I used as every time I get myself stuck, I'd go back and see how did they do it with this story, and it would give me some fresh inspiration.
Awesome. Now, what's the process been like between writing and then working with an artist to kind of bring that to life? If you write the straight fiction, it's all, you're asking the reader to interpret everything. But this, through a graphic novel, you're asking, an artist. What's that been like?
It's been awesome. I mean, I think I hit the jackpot. I found this artist. He lives in Mexico, Pyrink, and he's been a dream to work with. And so what I'll do is I will write the whole story, and I'll chapter by chapter and say what exactly is in each frame and what the words are and what the picture should be. And then it's really up to him to create all the characters and the scenes and the settings and then put it to life. And so we've really found a great rhythm, and what I love about it is that these are not easy stories I'm throwing at him. These are not To Kill a Mockingbird. These are I need werewolf transformations, mutations, I need aliens, I need vampire bats, so whatever monster or supernatural horror story I throw at him, he has fun with. He'll send me back his ideas on the characters, and I'll give my feedback. Then he'll send like a chapter at a time, and I really, if he has some of his work is so beautiful that I'll say, let's blow that up to a full page. And that's kind of the fun with the graphic novels. You can say, okay, we can do 9 boxes on this page. This one is really cool. It's really impactful. There's no words on it. I could frame this in my house in an art gallery. So let's blow that up to a full page or a half page. So there's a lot of back and forth that way. But I think I've just been lucky in getting an artist that gets my work. I've worked on another graphic novel that was a little more challenging. So I think you really have to get a good rapport between the author and the graphic artist. And I feel like Pyrink and I really have that. For instance, the fifth book is about all the UFO history and sightings of UFOs that have happened at Hanford over the years, and there's been a lot of them. So I took all those reports, and that's the fifth book. It's called Switchland. It'll come out early in 2027. And just yesterday, I got my first drawings from Pyrink of the aliens, and it's awesome. So it's really fun. It's like opening a Christmas present, and I get so excited when the emails come in, and so it's been a fun process.
That's awesome. Now how long does the process take? Because that fascinates me too, is just between you handing off the pages and him kind of fleshing them out. What's the turnaround time?
Yeah, I mean, it takes me a few months, obviously, to write the book, or several months sometimes. Depends. So once I'm done with mine and I'm ready to pass it off to Pyrink, I would say from the second he gets it to when it's done and ready to be printed, I mean, Twitchland, my last one came out a year ago, so this one's been a long process. Ditchland's longer than the other books, and it was more to it. And I think the werewolf story took a lot more time for the to get the artwork right. So I would say no more than a year, but I'd say on average for the other volumes, anywhere from 7 to 12 months for Pyrink to do the artwork.
That's great. So you kind of teased that you have the last entry coming in 2027. Do you have big plans for this one that's coming out next? Like, are you going to be able to do any signings or any way to kind of celebrate it?
It's a great question. I wish I was better at that. Last year I went to HorrorCon. I was supposed to go at Comic-Con this year. I wasn't able to go. I'm hoping to go next year. My website has just been redone. It's called mulliganworld.com, and the stories of everything are on there, all the books and all the plays. I do a lot of social media. For Ditchland, it just went on Amazon this past week, so I'm doing a lot of these type of podcasts and interviews. It'll drop officially. It's pre-order now, and on September 15th, Ditchland will come out. So there'll be, I'm sure, a lot more press like this. I work full time, so I'm not like on a book tour or a signing tour. I do all this on in my spare time. So I'm trying to juggle these two worlds that I have, a day job in the corporate world and a weekend night job as a crazy graphic novelist.
Yeah, and it's definitely it is definitely a challenge, because I don't know if people get that a lot, is that to really kind of be able to focus on the release of something takes so much time, and it you've had to be have, you had work, so it makes it difficult. So I totally get that.
Yeah, and I'm doing the graphic novels, but I also have I write plays, my new play. And so the plays are getting staged randomly here and there. And I have a world premiere of a new play called Pig Butchered, which opens up in December in Palm Springs with this first run. I had a scary play last year at Point Loma based on a real life haunted house here in San Diego that did crazy well and won a ton of awards. I'm negotiating that for now to come to San Diego. So, I have the graphic novels and I also have the plays. And so I'm always just kind of juggling the two.
Have you ever, and I ask this with full ignorance because I just don't know how this would work, have you ever considered collecting the plays to release, or do you put them together so, like, for folks, or is it just kind of people would reach out just so they can put them on?
Yeah, it's a whole world. I mean, each play I've tried to partner with. Luckily, I have a couple theaters that love my work, and so there's one in New York that always likes to do my shows off Broadway, and there's one in Palm Springs which likes to premiere my shows. So, and other than that, I'm just sending it around all over the place. So, you just got to find. It's a hard world. It's also a tough time for theaters, I think, with arts, funding being slashed. And if you're a regional theater company and you do a couple shows in a year, of course you're going to be really particular in what you have. And so going with a new playwright like myself and a scary immersive play may not be for everyone always. So it's a lot of networking. And then finding the right theater that wants to take a chance. I mean, there's a theater right now I'm talking to who wants to do Witchland, and they heard me speaking on a podcast and got super excited. So you never know how it's going to happen.
Well, that's amazing. Like I think all of this is fantastic, but like I have always loved the idea of spooky theater. So
Me too.
I love that. Yes, we could talk sidebar a lot about that. But so how can people follow you best? You'd mentioned a website and Instagram. Can you throw those out there again?
So the website, it's a new website. I think it's good. It's mulliganworld.com, and it has everything about has links to the plays, links to the books. If it's the play goes on, you can get tickets, you can get links to all the book sales. So there's mulliganworld.com. And then I also have on mostly Facebook and Instagram. It's under Witchland Play. It's how you find me there. That started it all. So Witchland Play on Facebook and Instagram. And on Amazon, I have an author page for the graphic novels. And the books, like I said, are all on Amazon. They're actually everywhere. You can go to Barnes and Noble, Target.com, but Amazon is kind of the one I work with the most because it's easiest. So
Perfect. Well, I cannot thank you enough for making some time to talk to me. I wish you all the best with the new release, and I look forward to hearing about the new one next year. I hope, and I'm excited.
Aliens. It's aliens. Get ready.
And I'm excited for you for your new plays. So thank you
Oh,
so
cool.
much. It was a pleasure to speak with you.
Yeah, me too. It's great talking to you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Take care.
Bye-bye. Yep.
Bye. Once more, I want to
Mono.
thank Tim Mulligan for making some time to speak with me. That was amazing. I haven't gotten a chance to speak with anybody that had put out a graphic novel series, or a playwright that's kind of creating spooky plays. That's fascinates me, and has always been something I've wanted to do myself. So that is amazing. Great conversation. His newest graphic novel hits September 15th. You can order it everywhere. You can find out more about him at Mulligan World, and it has links to all of his stuff, and like gives you information on everything he's up to. And I just can't encourage you enough to go and check this stuff out because it sounds amazing. I thank him one last time. And as for me, you can find all my stuff at spookychris.com, all of my links to my podcast and my own bunch of books. There are links to them, and my blogs, my reviews and everything else, and even information on my weird little horror stuff I do where I live, putting on shows out here, which gives me some relative weird joy. If you want to follow my podcast, you can follow it on your least favorite podcasting app. And I thank you for tagging along with me, and I will talk to you soon. Take care.